This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We cannot do everything. The only way we can try to tackle this huge, big elephant is by small bites.
That's South Africa's prosecutor, Shamila Batowi, on the small success in the fight against endemic corruption. Details coming up. Also, renewed separatist threats in Cameroon's English-speaking regions is hampering the opening of schools. And Zimbabwean refugees in Botswana are unwilling to return home due to fear of persecution. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. South Africa's top corruption investigators and prosecutors have warned that the country's recent gains against graft could be undone if they do not get more funding soon. In the past 2 weeks, law enforcement agencies have arrested and charged more than 20 people for alleged financial crimes involving millions of dollars. Those arrested include serving and former police commissioners, members of the government, and business people with close ties to the ruling African National Congress, or ANC. Darren Taylor reports.
High-level graft has plagued the continent's second-largest economy for decades. Yet only a few ANC members have ever been convicted of corruption-related crimes. Even then, they've either received suspended sentences or served very little time in jail. In the 9 years that Jacob Zuma was president until early 2018, he packed law enforcement and prosecution agencies with his allies. They refused to probe cases connected to the ruling party. But South Africa's current prosecution's chief, advocate Shamila Batowi, is clearly not cut of that cloth.
The wheels of justice are turning. It's been slow. And there have been events in the past weeks that show that this is the case.
Her officials at the National Prosecutions Authority, or NPA, have recently arrested people who were considered untouchable in the Zuma era. People like former ANC MP Vincent Smith. A company allegedly gave him hundreds of thousands of rands in cash and gifts so that he'd use his influence to win tenders for it. Also set for the dock is Zuma's friend from his home province of KwaZulu-Natal, millionaire businessman Toshan Pandey, also for tender fraud. Then there's Edwin Sodi, the Ferrari-driving businessman known for his flashy lifestyle and for huge donations to the ruling party. He's been arrested for his alleged role in plundering $15 million from an asbestos removal project. These, says Batowi, are only her officer's first targets.
Let us be frank and candid. This is one tiny, tiny pinpoint of a massive iceberg.
She acknowledges it's going to be very difficult to destroy that iceberg.
We cannot do everything. The only way we can try to tackle this huge, big elephant is by small bites. In the past, these cases might never have seen the inside of a courtroom. And the fact that these cases are now beginning to come to the court shows that things are changing and that the days of impunity are certainly limited.
Two individuals the NPA dearly wants to charge are AJ and Atul Gupta. The two Indian brothers allegedly conspired with Zuma to steal billions of dollars from state-owned companies. NPA investigations head, advocate Hermione Cronier, is appealing for the government's help to extradite the Guptas from their base in Dubai, part of the United Arab Emirates.
It's certainly a challenge that the government will have to look at very carefully and very closely to see what levers do we have that we can press to get our counterparts in other countries to actually provide the assistance that they have indicated they are willing to give but just hasn't been forthcoming.
She says the NPA is also struggling to access a lot of the stolen money that's stashed in various international bank accounts.
We've come to a point where we've accepted that we may have to simply cut our losses and deal with what we have and what we can access from other countries that have assisted.
A commission of inquiry says 1.5 trillion rand, about $100 billion, was plundered from state institutions in the final 4 years of the Zuma administration. Batoyi warns that proposed budget cuts could lead to the NPA losing almost 600 prosecutors, an outcome, she says, that would end a war on those who've pillaged the public purse that's barely begun. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Andrew King's tattoo parlor was suffering from South Africa's pandemic lockdown and social distancing. So he gathered a team and put their creativity into other fashionable designs to fit the market. King created a shirt with a built-in mask for COVID-19, which could prove a hit in South Africa, the country worst hit by the virus on the continent. Franco Pugliese reports from Johannesburg.
South African tattoo parlor owner Andrew King's business was hit hard by the coronavirus pandemic. King explains.
It was devastating, and because the tattoo industry was regarded in the same as the beauty industry, like the hairdressers and such as.
But instead of rolling over in defeat, King put his creative skills to work with clothing designers in an effort to fight COVID-19. Designer Andre Krukam worked on the shirt that emerged.
The concept, the idea of having a fixed mask really appealed to me. Then, of course, went back to the drawing board with Andrew, and the thing was to have a product that was actually medically certified.
The result, King's Pure Hair brand shirt has a filter inserted into the neck that has been independently tested. JP Harmsay is a technical manager for Vivid Air, the company that tested the filter.
We recently tested the D15 mask, and the results we got was very good. But especially on the bigger particles, we had great results, making it very effective against the spread of COVID-19.
The neck of the garment is pulled up over the face and mouth when needed to prevent infected droplets from spreading the virus. But the mask also can be tucked away when not required, says King.
So practicalities is when the mask is up, people can turn their heads up and down side to side. And the convenient side of it is that you can put it down and it's always on you.
The shirt could prove a hit in South Africa, the country on the continent hit hardest by the virus. Kerry Lubscher, who is a customer, gives her perspective on the mask shirts.
It's good to wear them when you have forgotten your mask, and it's easy to pull up, and especially because I work with clients, it's nice and easy to put on, tie it back, make it comfortable, and it's easy breathable and easy to talk through as well.
It's just one of the latest creation as the world adjusts to the reality of COVID-19. Franco Pugliese for VOA News, Johannesburg.
At least 3,000 Cameroonian teachers have refused offers by the Central Africa State military to transport teaching staff to schools in the conflict-prone English-speaking regions. The teachers who fled separatist attacks, looting, burning and occupation of their schools in the English-speaking regions say they are not sure of their safety, as some separatist fighters are again threatening to kill teachers and students who go to school. Boki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde that the renewed separatist threats are casting doubts over all schools reopening after 4 years of closure due to separatist crisis.
47-year-old primary school teacher Fru Isaac says he has refused an offer by the Cameroon military to take him to his school in the restive English-speaking region. However, Fru said Friday, six of his peers accepted the offer to be transported by the military from the town of Bamenda to Ndop in the English-speaking Northwest region.
The authorities are now taking the teachers who cannot access their stations in armored cars. But the question is, when you successfully take them there, how will the teachers cope in the absence of these armored cars?
Fru said he remained convinced that fighters were still hiding in the bush, ready to commit atrocities on teachers and students when the military transport leaves. However, Henderson Ketong, the highest government official in the English-speaking Northwestern Gokutunya Division, where NDOP is located, says teachers who fail to return to school will be punished. Ketong says the military will also find and punish people he describes as agents sent by separatists to threaten parents if they send their children to school.
Anybody, especially teachers who continue to insist on boycott, should know that they have another agenda which is hidden. And woe betide anybody who will still continue to carry out campaign and sensitization for this doctrine of boycott.
Cameroon's military said it has been on standby since October 5, when the country's 2020-2021 school year began, to transport teachers, students and administrative staff to schools in English-speaking towns and villages. The military said they acted to ensure that schools closed for the past 4 years as a result of the separatist crisis can reopen their doors so thousands of children can have access to education. However, Cameroon's ministries in charge of elementary and secondary education said more than 3,000 teachers did not show up last week. Cameroon reported that 140 of close to 500 schools closed by fighters within the past 4 years had reopened, with about 30,000 anxious children in attendance. Some Anglophone activists have asked for schools to be reopened, saying it was a human rights abuse to continue to deprive children of education. The Teachers Association of Cameroon said at least 300 teachers responded to the calls and returned to schools in the English-speaking regions. The association said many of the teachers preferred to return on their own for fear of being identified with the military by fighters. However, a group calling itself the Interim Governing Council of Ambazonia, the nation they are fighting to create, said it had banned all schools controlled by Cameroon's central government in Yaoundé from operating in the English-speaking regions. It said it had ordered its fighters to abduct teachers and students who dare go to school. Colonel Louis Fessel, in charge of road safety at Cameroon's Defense Ministry, says special troops have been deployed to assure the safety of the teachers and students in all English schools.
Our forces made it possible to restore serenity in these areas affected by crisis. We can therefore reassure the entire educational community in these areas about the protective measures being taken by the defense and security forces for a smooth and successful 2020-2021 academic year.
Cameroon's government is also encouraging the creation of militias around schools to inform the military of any strange movements and visitors. The separatist conflict in Cameroon has left over 3,000 people dead and half a million displaced, according to the United Nations. The crisis started in 2016 when teachers and lawyers took to the streets to complain about the overbearing influence of the French language in the bilingual country. The military responded with a crackdown, and separatists took up weapons, claiming that they were defending civilians. They asked for a school shutdown and vowed to make the English-speaking regions ungovernable. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
More than 300 Zimbabweans at a refugee camp in Botswana have urged their host government to finalize their status because they are unwilling to return home due to fears of persecution. The majority of the refugees fled their country during a deadly presidential election in 2008. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
A spokesperson for the refugees, Begimpilo Weza, said the migrants need a resolution to their issue after spending more than a decade at the Dukwi refugee camp. Some of Weza's countrymen and women were repatriated last year, but the rest have refused to return. The majority were supporters of the opposition movement for Democratic Change Party, who fled in the aftermath of an often violent 2008 presidential election that left scores dead. Weza said the government should make a decision on the refugees' future. Some want to be integrated into the Botswana community or transferred to another country.
No one likes to be in the camp for all these times. We just move on because we have no options. We don't have anything to do. But no one can be happy to live under such conditions whereby we can't work, you can't do anything.
He emphasizes they do not want to go back to Zimbabwe, particularly amid reports of harassment against opponents of President Emmerson Mnangagwa's rule.
Yeah, it's a concern because this we knew it has been always happening. If you see issues coming to public in Zimbabwe, it will be telling you that it is at a worst stage. We know that SADC can't do anything because they have got their own relationships with Zimbabwe.
The COVID-19 outbreak halted the repatriation process. The remaining refugees had challenged their repatriation, and their cases were due to be heard by the UN High Commission on Refugees and Habron authorities. Botswana's Defense, Justice and Security Minister Kagiso Musi said the process is on hold due to COVID-19.
My ministry is currently working in collaboration with the government of the Republic of Zimbabwe and other critical stakeholders to find durable and lasting solutions to the plight of refugees. However, progress has been hampered by the COVID-19 pandemic, which has placed restrictions on cross-border movement persons.
Last year, Botswana repatriated more than 1,000 refugees to Namibia and Zimbabwe. The Namibian refugees were deported despite their protestations that it was unsafe to return. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Habrone, Botswana.
A new report says millions of Zimbabweans remain stateless in their own country because they have not gotten the civil documents that confer citizenship. Rutendo Maweri reports from Harare.
The Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission's new report focuses on the challenges Zimbabweans face in acquiring birth certificates, national identity cards, passports, citizenship status, and death certificates. The report concludes that millions of Zimbabweans are not registered, largely because birth certificates are the most difficult national document to acquire. The commission's chairperson, Dr. Elasto Mugwadi, described the birth certificate as a primary document that embarks on the acquisition of other documents.
We have upwards of 2.3 million children who do not have these documents. When you have children, you know, numbering up to 2.3, why are they failing to get them? It's because their parents do not have them. So we have close to over 1.5 million of adults without these documents. Yeah, it's frightening.
Mugwadi said the lack of the registration documents can result in a loss of human rights. He said during its inquiry, the commission learned of children who could not enroll in schools because they lacked birth certificates and adults who could not vote as they had no identity documents.
The Bill of Rights is very clear on the right of people who were born here in terms of access to the documents. It's not a privilege. It's a right.
The commission recommends that the problem be urgently addressed and said only when a human rights approach is used will the documentation crisis be resolved. The Minister of Home Affairs, Kazembe Kazembe, asked VOA to send written questions, which he did not answer. The Speaker of the National Assembly, Jacob Mudenda, however, said access to documentation was a primary right and forms the epicenter of human identity. Mudenda added that even getting a passport in Zimbabwe should be easier than it is.
Passport is a right, not a privilege. It is saddening to see those hundreds of people milling around in queues trying to get a passport. That must be the thing of the past. We must come up with new measures to mitigate that suffering of people as they wait to apply for their passports.
The Human Rights Commission report says much of the problem lies in discriminatory practices by some registrar general officers. Other problems included alleged corruption in the registry offices, inconsistent information from the registrar general's office, a cumbersome process for registering home birth, and the cost of registration services. The report provides recommendations to government departments on improving the process and also urges the Minister of Primary and Secondary Education to allow children into school without birth certificates. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.